ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's the way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. And welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. We're here to talk nerdy with you. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley,
Tim Coker,
and Tim Mattson.
Hey, we are all here. That's good. That's all good. So basically, we're here to talk nerdy with you like we do, try to do at least once a week, although the last week's the MD PopCon recap... Man, that's a lot of work on my end, guys. Took a couple days extra to get that one out. Don't forget, you can always contact us on Twitter. The Nerd Up Podcast now has an official Twitter handle, and we're at Nerd Up Podcast. Easy enough. You can contact us on Twitter as a whole, or you can contact us individually. In fact, I think there might be a new surprise out there for that. You can reach me at Gil Wilson. And in the same order, guys, what's your Twitter addresses?
Eric Bill, E-R-I-C-B-I-L-L. That's at Eric Bill, obviously.
Mine is Tim K has to say. And yes, I am finally on Twitter.
I know. There's the surprise. What's up with that?
That's exciting.
We peer pressured him into it.
Yeah. I know. It's so easy.
And Tim.
Peer pressure me, I mean.
Yeah, true. That? And Tim Mattson, what's yours?
I bowed to pressure long ago. It's Tim Gone Mad. T-I-M-G-O-N-M-A-D.
All right. So there you go. You can get a hold of us individually, or you can get a hold of us as a whole on Nerd Up Podcast or at Nerd Up Podcast. We'll be glad to talk with you. And also, one other thing, you can contact us on the Nerd Up Podcast page, which is nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. There is a little section on the right-hand side of the page that says leave a voice message. And you can click on that, and using your computer's microphone, just record us a message. And if you do so, we will actually, if you want us to, if it's okay with you, in fact, make sure you make a note of that when you leave us the voice message saying it's okay to use this in the podcast. Well, your voice can be on our podcast with your question, answer, comment, complaint, or whatever. You know, so no matter what you have to say, we'll share it. So that's on the right-hand side of the Nerd Up Podcast page itself. You can just click on it and record using your computer's microphone. Also, we also got something new, guys. We're trying to keep this podcast free. We're realizing that, especially after a trip to Indianapolis for all of us, this is not a cheap venture. So to help keep the podcast free, also on the Nerd Up Podcast page, you can click. We have a merch table. You can also go to cafepress.com/nerduppodcast, and we got t-shirts, coffee mugs, Christmas ornaments, Christmas stockings, thongs, boxers, briefs. I mean, you name it, you can buy it from the Nerd Up Podcast. There's even iPad covers, phone cases, everything. It's there from the Nerd Up Podcast. Get the items, help keep it free, and hey, plus you'll be wearing super stylish clothes.
So timely as Christmas ornaments in July.
I know. Get them now, then you're having them ready, see?
That's right. Before they sell out.
No, that's exactly
yeah.
Right. Plus, we're going to be...
definitely a danger.
Yes. Plus, we're going to be changing our designs probably every so often, and sometimes some of them might not be available. They'll be like a limited-time print. So,
collector's items.
Yeah, and we'll have multiple covers, you know. You got to have the variants. So, anyway, help keep the podcast free. Check it out. Let's see. We'll talk about a few things before we get into the meat of the podcast. First of all, I'm sure Tim Mattson's got something to say about this. He's the one that recommended this. Calvin and Hobbes creator Bill Watterson secretly drawing a comic strip. What's up with that, Tim?
Wow, yeah, I just ran across this today. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the strip Pearls Before Swine. But hey, anybody? No? Okay.
No.
It's a cute little comic strip, some talking animals. A lot of it is about kind of the artist poking fun at himself for being a poor artist, not very good. And so Stephen Pastis is the artist. He's a big fan of Bill Watterson. He contacted Mr. Watterson at some point and talked to him about maybe guesting on his strip. And they came up with this conceit where part of the strip would be drawn by Bill Watterson with absolutely no notification or nothing on there to indicate that. And Watterson's only stipulation was that he not tell anybody for at least three strips, keep it a total secret. And so he did. And now today he's put up saying, hey, yeah, these three strips, part of them were drawn by Calvin and Hobbes creator Bill Watterson.
Hmm. That's kind of cool.
What a get.
Yeah.
No kidding. It's really cute because the whole conceit is, you know, his stand-in, the artist in the comic strip, is always taking guff for being a poor artist. And he's being trolled by the little girl that lives next door, and she keeps saying she can draw better than him, and so he asks her to prove it, and she does. Guess what? Bill Watterson is that little girl.
Ah, that's good play. That's cool.
So yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. I thought I'd bring that up.
That's good info there. I might have to check that out now. Of course, that's a good way to drive some money toward this comic strip.
Just to be clear, I mean, that strip is really funny on its own. I liked that strip already. I think it's cute. The gags are funny, and the art is not terrible. I think he takes too much of his own lumps there.
Now, what's the name of the strip again?
Earls Before Swine.
Okay, I'm going to keep an eye out for that, see if we got it in our local papers. And if not, I'm sure they're going to come up, they always do, with some sort of collected edition, some sort of trade paperback type thing. Mm-hmm. Anything good does. All right, also, starting on Monday, which will be about the time this podcast is published, E3. Who wants to jump on that one?
I guess I will, since I put that one up as well. I'm really super excited about this because I can't wait for a reason to own my PS4. I've been sitting on this PS4 since it launched, and I have played some games on it, but as far as a huge AAA game that I'm super excited about, haven't really found it yet. You know, so I'm really hoping that on Monday that Sony knocks it out of the park with, in the perfect world, it would be Fallout 4. I would love to see an announcement for Fallout 4. But on Monday, the major publishers will be doing their press conferences. Microsoft goes first at 9:30. That's Pacific time. EA is at noon. Ubisoft is at 3. Sony closes out the day at 6 o'clock. And then, just to be a little different, Nintendo is not doing a presentation this year at E3. They skipped it last year and there was a lot of talk about that. This year they're skipping it again and they're doing an online video event Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. Hopefully there'll be a lot of really cool announcements. Myself, like I said, looking forward to the Sony press conference.
Well, I would be curious about the Nintendo. Isaac and I, we've got to really enjoy this Wii U, the graphics, the display, the playability with the little portable pad that you have. I really enjoyed that. I'm kind of upset that they're skipping out. But then again, like you said, the next day they'll be doing their own. We'll see.
Well, here's my theory, and I mean, I don't have any inside information from Nintendo, but it just seems to me that over the past decade, at least the last decade, they have been kind of edging into their own universe. Like, they don't want to be compared to the Xbox or to the PlayStation. They want to be in a hermetically sealed universe of their own. Now, whether that is succeeding or not is, you know, up for debate. I mean, my understanding is that they've been losing money like crazy on their hardware, except for their handhelds, which have remained strong. And there's been a lot of speculation about, you know, whether Nintendo was just going to throw in the towel on hardware and just be a game publisher as far as you know, console systems go. They would still be making handhelds because that's a very lucrative enterprise for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that happening anytime soon, but it wouldn't necessarily shock me to hear that that was the direction they're going to go. But this whole thing with them kind of, you know, stepping away from E3, saying that's not our gig, we're going to do our own gig, just seems to corroborate this thing of, you know, they're not going to look at the other consoles, they're not going to compare themselves to the other consoles, and they haven't yet released a console that has been keeping pace with the other consoles either. I mean, the Wii U is really a last-gen system. It came out, what?
Definitely.
Yeah, how many years after the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 came out, you know, a few years after that, kind of halfway between their cycle, but it was not an improvement as far as the hardware goes. Of course, the thing that sells Nintendo systems are Nintendo games. But anyway, it is curious that seems to be their strategy.
Nintendo's always kind of gone their own way. I mean, they chart their own course. That's why the Wii was such a colossal success. No one else was doing that more casual kind of motion-based gaming. And it really seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people that weren't what you would traditionally call gamers. And
like
then...
Me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And your mom. You know, your mom is not what you would call a gamer. But hey, all of a sudden, everybody's moms wanted to go bowling with the Wii.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Senior Citizen Center here, it has a weekly bowling tournament on the Wii.
And there's nothing to be, that's nothing to look down on. That was a brilliant move by Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely inspired. They saw a business opportunity where no one else saw it. But the thing is, Nintendo can't strike gold every time. The Wii U is, by all accounts, kind of a failure as a hardware platform. Like Eric said, you know, people go to Nintendo for Nintendo games, and this time out, third-party publishers are just not taking to their hardware. There's not the number of titles that the Wii had, and people just are not taking to that gamepad.
I'll tell you what, whether the creators are or not, as players, Isaac and I are just loving it. I mean, me being the older player, him being the younger player, either one of us, we'll fight over who gets the pad and who gets the nunchucks, because you can still incorporate the nunchucks into it. Right now, it seems like you can only have one pad attacked, so I don't know how they're going to... They should do two, maybe. Maybe in the future they'll figure a way to do that. We're loving the gameplay because of the controls. It's just something different and something fun, I guess. All right, let's move along here. Let's get on to some other fun stuff. What else is going on? Well, let's talk about some movies. But before we get into movies, I have to mention once again the Eagle Theater here in Robinson. These guys, until you've experienced it, it's like a big city theater placed in this little bitty small town of Robinson. Same goes with the theater they have in Clinton, Illinois, and that's the Clintonia Eagle. We go every preview night that they have, well, when a movie in... you know, interest us. I won't go on a preview night of Sex and the City 3. Trust me, I won't.
I think you should.
Good for you.
They will have that one. But
I would pay to hear your opinion on that.
Well, I can't express that on a family-friendly podcast. Anyway, but they have one thing, and one of the reasons we love going on their preview nights is typically they're Thursday night. On a rare occasion, they'll be like a Tuesday or Wednesday. That's extremely rare, but mostly Thursday night. And Thursday night is free popcorn night. You bring in any container you want, and they'll fill it up all night long. And whenever they close the concessions a half hour after the last movie starts, when they close the concessions, they have a big tubby they fill with popcorn. And, you know, they have the scoop. You can scoop your own even after that point. So free popcorn on Thursday nights is an awesome deal. Plus, they have all sorts of other various nights. Now, here's the really cool thing. They do this every summer. This right here shows you how community-oriented the Eagle Theater in Robinson is. Every Tuesday and Wednesday of every week, they have free movies for kids. The kids, I honestly can't remember the age. I think it's 13 and under. They can come in and watch a free movie. And, yeah, they're not first-run movies, but they're all really good. Despicable Me 2. The Rios 2 movie, you know, all children's movies that have been released within the last year or so. They will have those once a week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Kids get in free. That's all it is. Kids get in, you just bring your kids. In fact, I know several people that just drop off the kids and say, hey, there's my babysitter for 2 hours. but they do that all summer. I don't think I could do that. But, you know, anyway, so that they really have a real community responsibility going on, the Eagle Theater. So I just want to give them a little plug. I mean, after all, that's where I get to go see my movies in the full comfort. And I'm telling you, this is a very modern inside theater, and it's just great. Free refills on soda. I mean, I went to a theater in Indianapolis, and it cost, I think it was about like, for two sodas, I think it cost us $12, and there were no refills. Here, it's going to cost you maybe $8. I forget the exact prices, but you get free refills all through the movie. So just hang out at the Eagle Theater all day long and drink free soda. So anyway, but I just had to give them a little plug because these guys do it right, and plus that's where I get to go see my movie. So let's move on to the movie.
Awesome.
Yeah, they are. They're really nice people. Let's move on to the movies. We'll start out with one that we started talking about a couple of podcasts ago. Eric had yet to see it, and I know you guys have seen it since. X-Men, the new X-Men movie. All right, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they do it right this time?
Well, I have to say, I haven't seen it yet, so I'll sit out on this one.
Ah, okay. Well, without getting overly spoilery then, Tim, what I'll say is that I think they got it righter, but it's not a home run.
Mm.
You know, I feel like the X-Men movies, you know, when they started, they were incredible because nobody had ever tried taking the source materials as seriously as that and really, like, well, when I saw the movie, it knocked me out, and I think everybody I was talking to at the time, you know, it was like something that was so new. But when you look at it, you know, now it's a different world where people are actually willing to, like, studios are actually willing to give a little more faith to the original concepts and the original characters and how they're done. So when I watched this movie, you know, I couldn't help but be a little bit annoyed that it wasn't Kitty Pryde that goes back in time like it is in the comics. It's Wolverine, mm-hmm. again, even though he doesn't have anything to do really during the whole movie except, you know,
show off his butt
with Charles and whatever. Yeah, exactly, you know. And I mean, I like the Wolverine character, don't get me wrong, but it still feels like it's very much, we're afraid to be too much like the comics, and so we're going to still kind of keep things in this sci-fi realm. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in the movie, and I'm just being a complainer here, really, but...
Do you think that's really the case, or is it just the fact that they think that Wolverine is the character that everybody wants to see?
Oh, well, he may be the character that everybody wants to see, but that doesn't make it a good X-Men movie. You know what I mean? Like, it might make it yet another decent Wolverine movie. But one of the things that's so distinctive about X-Men is it is probably the only comic book world, and certainly it was the one that defined it, the idea of being a world where men and women were truly equal in the world of the comics. You know, Storm is just as important a character as Cyclops, as Jean Grey is, as Wolverine. When you read an X-Men comic, you know, they all kind of have that importance. And that was there in the first X-Men movie. But since then, they've gotten away from it. And with this movie, you know, while Mystique was the only character that I really cared about in the whole movie, because the rest were, like, I don't know, Magneto, he shows up and he makes trouble the entire time and then he leaves, you know. But it was weird because, you know, even Mystique is just there to kind of be torn between the two points of view of the male characters. And I felt like it surprises me that after all this time, the movies get more and more kind of male-centric, mm-hmm. when that isn't really true to what the comics are about. But that said, I liked it a lot better than X-Men First Class, and the fight scenes in it are unreal. I mean, really,
oh, yeah.
Like Man of Steel level awesome.
Yeah.
And again, I hated Man of Steel, but I love the fight scenes in it.
Well, let me ask you this, Tim. This movie, and this is one thing I've been kind of saying, is that take all those X-Men movies, including all the Wolverine movies, and X-Men First Class. Don't you think that this movie just kind of cleans it up a little bit so they can continue making more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's a very admirable thing for them to be doing, you know, because it had gotten to be a mess. You know that it's obvious with these films that thinking about how it all works together was extremely distant second to trying to make the movie as exciting as it could be in the now, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of trusting that people will just not care because they'll come and see what they like. And that's been true, you know, but then again, when you get the example that Marvel is setting, where not only are they incredibly true to the characters and where the spirit of the characters is so correct, but they're really having a pretty tight continuity between their movies. And I think that, you know, with the X-Men movies, that's already foobarred, you know, like nobody can believe. So I think they did the best they could. And I will say one thing, that the end of the movie, and I don't want to spoil it for Mr. Madsen, but there's a scene at the end where one character, you know, kind of goes towards a door and sees some other characters.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, I had this little boonk arrow in my heart moment where I'm like, aw.
Yeah, same here.
I
was with you on that one, Tim.
Yeah, that worked absolutely.
But then another character walked in and interrupted the whole thing.
Yeah, and then there's that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was nice to have the bad stuff of X-Men 3 undone, you know?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, everybody hates on that movie, and I'm not going to defend it, really, but the way I rationalize having watched that movie more than once is that, like, it reminds me of when I was reading the original Byrne and Claremont X-Men books in the 70s and 80s, and then the annual would come out, right? And it's double length, and it's got everybody in it, and they're all fighting, but nobody looks quite right because they don't have the same creative team, you know? So on the one hand, you're glad to have that annual because it's, like, full of action, and it's, you know, another adventure, but it's a little off model, you know? That's mm-hmm. how X3 is for me.
And the events don't matter for the rest of the comic.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Madsen got that one right.
I mean, X-Men 3, I mean, the very moment that they hired Brett freaking Ratner to direct it, there was nothing that could have come good out of that film. And I will say that I don't discount the entire film. There are a few decent elements to X-Men 3, but by and large, it's just, the whole time you're like, this is being made by someone who completely does not get it.
No kidding.
And I mean, the fact that they killed off Professor Xavier just was, it wasn't what killed the movie, but it was exactly why it was a great example of why the movie doesn't work, because you don't kill off Professor Xavier. I mean, he is the heart of the X-Men. I don't understand. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion.
Well, but having read decades,
like you said, Ratner's a hack. I mean, he's not the man to tackle this material, and that's just something that you know going into this. So that who directed this is going to inform what you're going to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. I will say that I don't have any problem with the idea of Professor X being killed, because you know he's going to come back. No, and having read X-Men comics for decades, that's like a staple of X-Men comics. But like for me, I think the more worrying thing was that even though the whole point of the Dark Phoenix thing is supposed to be that, you know, she loses control of her powers and she dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, the crucial difference is that in the comics, she chooses to kill herself. She chooses to, you know, activate this laser cannon and disintegrate herself. And that is Jean Grey's agency. That's her as a character taking control of the situation and understanding, I have to stop this, right? And again, in the sort of star-driven crap that always ruins things in Hollywood, in X-Men 3, it has to be Wolverine that killed her.
Yeah.
That's him. You know, it just gets back to really betraying what X-Men is all about.
Well, let me ask you.
This discussion can actually, you know, inform another news item that was announced today. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Peyton Reed is going to be taking over the helm of Ant-Man after Edgar Wright exited the scene. And I don't know. I had never heard of Peyton Reed before today, but he directed Yes Man, that Jim Carrey film, Bring It On, that cheerleading movie, The Breakup, and Down With Love. So a bunch of romantic comedies.
What?
This is not the first guy I would think of when it comes to directing Ant-Man. And frankly, I am so satisfied with this decision. Edgar Wright was an inspired choice.
Oh, he would have been such a great movie.
Now all we have is just a warm body filling the director's chair, as far as I'm concerned, because he doesn't bring anything to this project for me.
All right, someone over at Marvel Movie Studios has been smoking some serious weed. I mean,
this is the first Marvel movie decision that I absolutely question. This was a terrible move.
Yeah, unless he's just filling in the place until they get someone to actually sit in the chair. That might be the case. Let's hope it is.
It was made official today, so apparently that is who's going to be directing the Ant-Man.
Let's rewind a little bit. Like, what did we know that gave us confidence that Jon Favreau would be able to make a good Iron Man movie? Or that, you know, the guys from Community would be able to make such a fantastic Captain America movie. I just want to, you know, interject that one of the things that Marvel Studios has been good at is giving directors who you wouldn't necessarily think of a chance to surprise you and generally make it a pleasant surprise. I mean, if you look at the two movies that they started with, one of them, you're like, Jon Favreau is making an Iron Man movie? What the hell is that about? And then you see Louis Leterrier, and it's like, well, okay, I get that he's kind of a mediocre action slot guy, but he's making a Hulk movie, so I get it. And which of those two movies was the more surprising and memorable? So, I am as disgusted by the Edgar Wright thing as anybody, but at the same time, I don't know the whole story, and I don't know what the real breakdown issue was. I know it was supposedly some kind of a script thing, but again, Marvel has done such a good job of taking care of these properties and putting together films that I want to see and will like watch multiple times when I get them, that I'm inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt on this, even though, I mean, losing Edgar Wright is a horrible, horrible thing to contemplate, because, man, was I excited about that movie.
Yeah. Well, let me back up what you're saying there. You know, realistically, I can look at that. Ang Lee, I thought that would be an awesome Hulk movie. Ang Lee? Look how horrible that turned out to be. So, okay.
No kidding.
I guess my point is, you went from something that everybody was really excited about, something that, you know, at the very worst, everybody's indifferent to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm indifferent. I see what Tim is saying. I mean, I hope for the best. I would love for Peyton Reed to step up and absolutely knock this out of the park. I hope for nothing but good things for him as a director. But he's stepping into a slot vacated by somebody whom I greatly admire.
Yeah.
So it'll be hard. It'll be hard sell for you, huh, Tim?
Well,
there's
a scale. I can't remember what the name of the chart or the scale is, but it's basically the cachet that a property or a star's name carries at any given moment. And this is something that Hollywood executives pay very close attention to. That's, you know, they pretty much live their lives. What's that?
Is that the Q score or whatever?
I think it is the Q score. I couldn't remember that. That does, that sounds right. But I can tell you that after Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, and now this other guy has taken over, that the Q score on Ant-Man has to have plummeted. I can't imagine it would have done otherwise.
Well, before we close out X-Men here real quick, I want to remark on something. This will talk. It's kind of a spoiler. The little post-credit scenes at the end of it. A lot of people in the theater I went to go see it with, they were all like, "What the expletive deleted?" And talking about it now, I recognized it, but I couldn't place it until I got home and Googled. But it goes on to prove Bryan Singer has been signed on to direct the next X-Men movie, which will be released in 2016, which is X-Men Apocalypse. So if you saw that little post-credit scene, that was Apocalypse putting together the pyramid. So now,
and they were originally going to call it Age of Apocalypse, and thank God they changed it, because Age of has been already claimed way too many times.
Yeah.
So, Ultron, perhaps.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps up. Yeah, if you see that, now that you go to the movie and you see that, like I said, a lot of people in my theater were huge X-Men fan, and they still didn't quite get it. But
yeah,
now you can put it together. Yeah, because really what it is, it just shows like a pharaoh with magical powers creating the pyramids by levitating rocks, and all the slaves and everybody looking on, chanting to, you know. It does have that moment. But
in the background, you have the four horsemen.
Exactly.
Very easy
you
to
gotta,
miss, though.
You got to pay attention
that was
to that.
Yeah, that
off, right? Yep. That's when I first recognized him, I'm like, oh, I know who that is. And that, and the four horsemen, they kind of like, you see that and you're like, wait a minute. And then when I went home, I Googled Apocalypse first thing. I'm like, okay, yes, I was right, but not quite. So there you go. Let's move on to another movie. This one I saw, and I know, anybody else seen Edge of Tomorrow yet?
Don't care about it.
Go on tomorrow.
Well, it's based
on foe of Tom Cruise.
Well, you know, here's the deal. I'm not a fan of Tom Cruise.
Me either.
By any means. Oh. But this is based on a Japanese novel called All You Need Is Kill. And I've heard so much about that book. My nephew is constantly recommending that for me. He goes, you got to read this. This is one of the coolest things ever. And I've never had a chance to do it.
My advice, go read that. Don't see the movie.
Well, I've seen the movie.
Guaranteed. Go read that. Don't see the movie. You'll have a better time.
I've seen the movie. Now I got to read the book. But I'll tell you what. Whenever I see Tom Cruise in a sci-fi, it usually surprises me in one way or another. And this one surprised me, and I think mainly because I think Emily Blunt stole this movie. Although Tom Cruise is the lead, and he's in it over and over again, and he's the one. Even Bill Paxton takes the movie at points, but Tom Cruise is just kind of there. He's the scenery they all get to push around, I guess. It's a very interesting story about a guy that, you know, aliens have invaded Earth. Actually, they've taken over most of Europe. And then Tom Cruise's character originally, he works in the media. He gets the media, gets everybody pumped so everybody will join the army so that they can go to this war. And so he all of a sudden is plunged into battle. And the story, I'm not going to give away the story of how that happens, because that's part, that's a very important part of the plot line. But he ends up having, every time he dies, he wakes up the day of the battle and he starts things over, and he finds out why, and it's just the storytelling in this is really, really, really intelligent, because of the fact they don't sit there and repeat everything over and over again like Groundhog Day. They do repeat a few moments so you can get the idea of what's going on, but after a while it's kind of assumed that, you know, he's already been through this before. And then there are points in the movie where, you know, they say, well, where do we do now? He goes, I don't know. We haven't reached this far yet. And there's different features of that they play with the time travel aspect that just makes it more intriguing. And they did it well. They really did it well. I was totally surprised by a Tom Cruise movie entertaining me for 2 hours and some odd. So,
well, it's gotten really good reviews. I mean, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's getting an 89%, which is pretty doggone good. And, I'm like the rest of you guys. As a person, I can't stand Tom Cruise. I think that he's an egomaniac, and his whole obsession with this whole Scientology thing is just makes me, you know, facepalm every time I hear it.
Yeah.
And the fact that anyone actually buys into it, and that producers let him set up a Scientology tent on the set of any movie that he's in, that this is part of his contract, just really irks me.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some good films that he's been in. I'm not going to say that Tom Cruise is a good actor, but in certain roles, he works for that role.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm not going to avoid going to see a movie just because Tom Cruise is in it.
Right.
And this is one of those movies that the whole concept and idea of it is interesting to me. And it's gotten good reviews, so I'm on board. I'm going to go see it tomorrow, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you're going to enjoy it, Eric, because really, it will totally surprise you. Again, like you said, just because Tom Cruise is in it does not mean that's a chance for you to miss it, because seriously, especially on the big screen, this thing explodes on the big screen, and I mean literally and figuratively. It's got some great... The aliens are so cool in this. They're almost robotic, and they call them mimics, and then there's an Alpha and Omega mimic that, again, the aliens in this are just phenomenal, and they create that threat to the world that causes all the nations to unite, and it's kind of got a nice little story with that. It's just, again, well done, and the special effects are really cool, and the writing surprises me completely. I mean, there's so many time travel movies, especially ones that you go back to the same point in time over and over again, that, you know, it can get very lazy in the writing. This one, they kept you on your toes, and again, I think Emily Blunt stole that movie from Tom Cruise, if you ask me. So sorry, Tom. Came out short on that one. Pardon the pun. All right. Now, real quick. Now, go see the movie. Go see it at the Eagle Theater in Robinson.
Moving on. Movie news that I really care about.
Yes.
Ghostbusters is being remastered and will return to theaters on August 29th for one day only.
Now, I don't get that. Why just for one day?
That's a great question. I don't know.
That would be awesome. I mean, just a week run at least would be good. Now, is that going to be a mass release or is it going to be a limited release?
No, it's not going to play anywhere near me. I can guarantee you that.
So that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah, it's going to be limited release. I'm not entirely sure why it's a one-day only event. Maybe it's just to really try to push ticket sales and get people just to come see it, generate excitement. There may be some other arcane rules as far as why they're releasing it for one day. I don't know.
Well, it might be a little teaser because there's been rumors flying around like crazy that new Ghostbusters movie is supposed to be coming out.
Which is going to be a remake, right?
I don't know. I keep hearing different stories on it.
One thing's for certain is nobody's certain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure it's going to get made. It's not in production yet. It's just it's greenlit, and then someone drops out of it. And,
right.
I think the...
Harold Ramis dies.
Yeah, that was a big blow to it right there.
I'm guaranteed this thing does not get made unless Bill Murray decides he wants to do it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I think could potentially save it. I'm not saying that Bill Murray's involvement would save it, but without Bill Murray, it's just going to be sad, I think.
Well, I mean, you got to have Bill freaking Murray, but you also got to have Dan Aykroyd involved somehow in the writing or something. So,
Dan's on board. So,
yeah, what I've heard. It's making it now.
Dan,
I don't know if he's going to be acting in it.
Dan carries no weight whatsoever on this project. None. Yeah. He doesn't bring any cachet to this whatsoever. His whatever cachet he had faded years ago. The only person that's going to make this get made is Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think with Dan Aykroyd doing some, I heard rumor that he was going to do some writing on it too. So I think he, as a writer, he could fill in some of the shoes that we're going to miss with Harold Ramis not involved anymore. You know, maybe possibly.
Just as a brief tangent to this, and this is just my own little mini rant, is, as I said, this is not going to play in any theater near me, and it's just a perfect example of why we need revival theaters in every town in the United States. There needs to be a place where you can show older films that have been cleaned up and restored on the big screen. Yes, we can buy them on Blu-ray, and yes, it's a thrill for me to see them on Blu-ray on my screen, but I want to see them on the big screen. I want to see Ghostbusters in a cleaned up version on the big screen. And I know I'm not the only one. Plus, think about all the generations that have never seen Ghostbusters on the big screen.
Right.
And you bring them to see this show. You tell me that any 12-year-old boy, that if you brought him to see Ghostbusters on the big screen today, that he's not going to dearly love that movie.
That's possible. Then the thing is, though, if you're going to bring back old movies onto a screen like this, like Ghostbusters, you got to kind of make it a social event anymore, you know? Like say, for example, Rocky Horror Picture Show. Anytime they do a special horror movie, it's a social event. It's not just, okay, we're going to show a movie. There's got to be something else come out about it. Now, that's what I'm wondering, if they're going to do that with this limited release of Ghostbusters.
Right.
All right, well, let's move on to another one. This one's yours, Eric. Take it away.
Yeah, actually, it kind of dovetails into the Ghostbusters discussion kind of well. It's another classic film that I bought a few weeks ago on Blu-ray, and I just got around to watching it today. The first time I've seen it in decades. I was actually in a production of this long, long ago in Central Florida where I played Mushnick. But Little Shop of Horrors was released in a special edition that includes the legendary director's cut, which I'd always heard about, read about, never seen because it wasn't available anywhere. The original cut of Little Shop of Horrors, you guys have all seen it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about the Jack Nicholson or the...
No.
Okay,
no.
The musical.
Right. The original cut was actually fairly close to the stage production. And the stage production has a bit of a downer ending, but it really works well for the stage production. Like there's, you know, basically everyone gets eaten by the plant. The plant, you know, it gets replicated because they take cuttings and sell them in every grocery store. And it, you know, balloons into the plants basically take over the world. There's this musical number at the end where all the characters are basically in green makeup and are part of the plant, singing the finale song. And then at the very end of the finale song, green streamers drop from the top of the house into people's laps. So it's a lot of fun. It really is. And it's not as much of a downer as it might sound like. But in the film, which I just got through watching a little while ago, the director's cut, it is a little bit weird to see this ending where everyone basically dies and the plants, and they do this extended ending that's very much an homage to Godzilla and King Kong, where these huge plants are crushing buildings, and it just goes on and on and on for a while, and it's just
super indulgent.
It is. And so, I mean, after watching that, I went back and watched the release ending, which is the story is they screened this for, a test audience, and the test audience, a bunch of them got up and left before the movie would even end. They hated it. And they told the producers, they're like, that ending is terrible. We can't stand the ending. People really connected with the characters, even though Simo Krelborn basically brings this on himself. And thematically speaking, the downer ending is more appropriate. But people really connected with his character and with Audrey. They didn't want to see them die. And so they went back and they reshot this happy ending. So after watching the director's cut with the downer ending, I went back and watched the release cut. And it is a better ending for this movie. But after watching the original ending, it does feel a little saccharine and manipulative. But, I think all in all that it works better with the upbeat ending than with the downer ending. But it's just an interesting experiment. I'm glad I finally got to see this because I'd heard and read so much about it. And it's one of those things that I like to judge for myself. I want to see both endings and make my own decision. Okay, which one works better? And after seeing it, I got to say that, at the end of the day, the reshoot does work a little bit better for the film.
Much better. Well, I would argue that the director's cut for ending is really long and indulgent, and it really kind of betrays everything you hope for at the end. I'm with the test audience on this.
Yeah.
I love those characters. I don't want to see them die. I want them to see them run off and be happy. And the reshot ending is, number one, shorter and more to the point, and it's just better.
Yeah, it is. And I showed it to my mom, and I showed it. She'd never seen the movie, period. And I showed her the director's cut first.
God.
And she turns to me with her jaw open, just like, is this really how they're ending this movie? And I just stifled a laugh. And after she watched it, then I went back. I was like, okay, this is not how they released it. I showed her the original ending. She goes, and she just sighed a sigh of relief. She goes, well, no wonder they changed
the There's your critic
I think the director's cut ending can be a great ending to it. I've seen the stage show a couple times, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the ending is perfectly fine on a stage. And I just think this particular director's cut is just overly long, overly slavishly faithful to the monster movie motif that he's going with.
Right.
And it's just not good.
No, we agree on that.
Well, let's move on to some TV. Now, there's not much going on. A lot of season finales have happened and explored, and, we're kind of in a lull right now. But the one thing I'm looking forward to, June 22nd, Falling Skies returns. You guys ever watch this series?
No.
Man, you guys got to check it out. Dr. John Carter. I mean, Noah Wiley is in this, and him and there's another actor, Will Patton. He plays the general. Basically, this is another one of those, the world's been invaded by aliens. And now, I will say, at the end of last season, they kind of confused me a little bit. But first of all, let's kind of get a recap. The world has been invaded, and aliens are basically enslaving the human race. Most of the human race is underground, and they're trying to destroy all these big motherships so that they can, you know, win the Earth back. Noah Wiley plays a history professor who, one of the big things, and this is what I like about the series, is that when he teaches, what he loves most is the Revolutionary War. And the Revolutionary War, you know, talks about liberty and being free as humans and, you know, that type of thing. And that's what he's relating this whole war with these aliens, is that, you know, we got to retrieve our freedom. So it's just the way they've done it, it's ongoing, and they're killing it with the idea of these different alien races throughout the universe. They're focusing on Earth. I'm hoping they get that one going soon. But anyway, yeah, check it out. June 22nd, that's coming up real soon. Let's talk about comic books.
I like comics.
Well,
I've heard that. Hey, Tim Coker, are you familiar with a comic called Henchman?
I am not.
Well, see, you should have gone to Indie PopCon.
I'd recommend it. I think it's a cute little comic. I already had it in my pull box, but yeah, I met the guys that created it at PopCon. They were really cool. It's basically about this kind of a loser guy who loses his job, loses his wife, needs money in a hurry, and so he becomes a henchman for this supervillain. And it's about his experiences doing that. He has a bad time, and it's funny. I think it's funny and poignant and kind of interesting.
That sounds right up my alley, because I've actually been revisiting one of my favorite shows recently, which is Venture Brothers. Mm. And I've been working my way through the first season again, and it brought back to me how I had never really thought about the life of a henchman before I watched this show. So it's interesting that there's this series coming out now in comics, too, that's the same thing, where you always wonder, like, you know, where does Dr. Doom get all these guys that get the hell beaten out of him by, you know, the Thing, right?
Right.
And then he's got, like, 30 more guys next time, and it's great that somebody's exploring that.
Yeah, it's created and written by Jameson Raymond, art by Ryan Howe, and, yeah, they're very funny. Not only are they seen as really replaceable, the villain's theme is a bowling theme, and so all his henchmen are dressed as bowling pins.
And, of course, the hero is the striker who throws bowling balls. So
mm-hmm. Awesome.
And looking at the artwork there at PopCon, I was just impressed. The artwork is, I mean, it sounds like a silly idea, but, you know, silly ideas can be really good. It sounds like a silly idea, but you look at the artwork and you're like, that's some good artwork, though. It's really cool.
It's totally cool.
That's great. I'm in.
Henchman.
Check it out.
You can get it on Comixology. I know that. So, what was the other comic? Let's see here. We talked about Plume a little bit last time around on podcast, and also we kind of talked about it on the recap of the Indie PopCon. Tim, you got anything further to say on Plume?
I mean, no, you should read it. I could talk a bit about that. I think that I actually enjoy Plume now, after visiting PopCon, because of interacting with the creator and artist, Carrie Smith. She was really friendly and really nice. And that's everything you hope for out of meeting somebody that's created a property that you really like.
Yeah, definitely so. Any other topics under the comics section that you want to talk about? Anybody? Tim?
Nah.
I'm good.
Okay, well then.
I've got one.
Other Tim, sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
There's a new title that I just picked up. It was recommended to me by someone else, and I really love it. It's called Brass Sun, and only one issue is out so far. It's actually reprinting something that's been running in 2000 AD over in the UK. And for those of you that don't know what 2000 AD is, it's kind of a awesome, gritty sci-fi comics anthology that is the place where Judge Dredd first showed up and has been running nonstop actually for, what, 30 years or something. So this new series is a really great kind of, oh gosh, I don't even know how to describe it, but there's another world where there's sort of total control of everything by a sort of a religious hierarchy, and the world is kind of spinning down, and things are not really, nothing is as people are being told, and so more and more people are rebelling, and so people are getting pushed down, but it all has this beautiful kind of conceit of gears and clockwork, and the art is gorgeous, but not overly fussy. It's just really nice, good storytelling. I really like the main character. And I don't want to say too much more about it, but I really encourage you guys to check it out. It's called Brass Sun. Beautiful, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Definitely be looking forward.
Sounds good.
Look at that. All right, well then let's move real quick. I got a short thing about books I wanted to pass along to everybody. Kind of a freebie thing I wanted to pass along to all you science fiction nerds. Basically, it's a website called phoenixpick.com. PhoenixPick.com, they have a lot of sci-fi available for ebooks for your Kindle or whatever reader you have. And each month, they give away a free book. Now, they've got authors such as Kevin J. Anderson, Larry Niven, you know, some good authors. This is not just a, you know, oh, these are guys that have just decided to write a book and we're going to let you have it for free. No, these are actually, you know, well-done authors that have been out there for a while, and they agree to once a month give away a free book, a free ebook, and I've been just loving it for about a year or so now. The website, PhoenixPick.com. Each month, there's a free book. Now, there's a series of books here recently. They released the third in the series as a free one, and so now I have the entire run, so it's kind of cool that I got by with that for a year after a year of being on this website. But they send you... so.
You cheap skate, you. I can't believe it.
Oh, man, believe it. It's true. Hey, Jackson Bostwick called me a cheap whatever, and I'm going with it. But anyway, definitely it's a great introduction to some authors that you may not be... you know, normally into, like Harry Turtledove, Kevin Anderson, I'm trying to think of a few others, Larry Niven, you've heard them before, but you may not have picked anything up. Maybe if you get a free book, you'll check it out and go check out some of the other stuff. But you can sign up, and every month they'll send you an email, and it's a code for a free ebook, and I'm loving it. I've been introduced to a lot of stuff, a lot of good sci-fi, too. So PhoenixPick.com, try it out. I just want to pass that along. I wish they'd pay me some money to put that advertising out. let's see here. Did we want to talk about some music?
Yeah, we can talk about some music.
All right. Well, I'll let you start it out, Tim. You got a couple that you wanted to start out with.
Well, one in particular I thought was really cool that all you anime nerds out there might enjoy. This group called Platina Jazz that does covers of anime music, music that's at the beginning or ending of anime. The thing is, they do it as a jazz arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that really caught my ear was the their version of the Sailor Moon song.
Yeah.
Which sounds nothing like what you would imagine it.
Yeah, you have to get about halfway through and you're like, oh yeah, Sailor Moon. Yeah, you introduced the video to me and I was like, okay, what am I going to expect? And it's kind of a loungy jazz type stuff, and it's really, really interesting music, you know, all by itself. But then you put it together with the nerd culture of anime, it's like, this is even cooler.
It is really cool. And yeah, you've kind of hit the description right on the head. The really cool thing about this, well, they've got four CDs out. By the way, this newest one is their fourth. And some of you may know, I do a monthly independent film screening where we, you know, feature stuff done by independent artists. And I contacted the guy behind this group, and they let us screen their music video this last Thursday. He was really nice to work with. And so that was just a little cool footnote. I thought that was neat.
Sure.
All right. Let's see here. What about you? There's another one you want to talk about, another nerdy music culture thing.
Yeah, well, I think we kind of covered this last time, but since we were talking about music, I thought I'd bring it up again. The Paul and Storm concert was great, and we had a great time. If you guys haven't seen their Learning Town videos on YouTube, you should check them out. They're pretty funny. It's basically the worst version of Sesame Street you can imagine. Definitely not for kids.
I got to ask this. Tim Coker, how'd you like the Paul and Storm concert? Oh, you didn't go. Never mind.
Oh, burn.
Oh.
You're all terrible people.
Yeah, we are, aren't we? All right, well, let me...
I think we've established that long ago.
Yeah. I'll close out the music section. We'll talk one more time about 5-Year Mission. You know, at the PopCon, I legitimately won a free DVD copy of Year 2 videos. Now, they have... basically, all their albums are like Year 1, Year 2, Year 3, and each album is 16 songs, and so it's not really a full season, year one of Star Trek or anything, because what are there, like 26 episodes in a season? So they, they're releasing these about 16 at a time, and each song is an episode of Star Trek. And I won the video, and I've been watching these videos, and they're just so cool. They take scenes from whatever episode they're, like, for example, Mudd's Women, they take scenes from that episode, and they mix it in with the music. They make the real cool creative video edits, and where it looks like the actors are singing along. There's all sorts of other fun stuff with those guys, and they take, like, for example, Cat's Paw. If anybody remembers that episode of Star Trek, one of the worst,
very well,
one of the worst ones, if you ask me. They take that and make it into a really cool song. And once again, they're a legitimate group They just so happen to, you know, their lyric choices are Star Trek episodes. So, they've even got a rap song out. The Trouble with Tribbles is almost like a Beastie Boys parody. I mean, so it's very interesting. You guys ought to check them out. It's got some really cool sound. They got their own sound, but they do a rap song with The Trouble with Tribbles. So 5-year mission, check those guys out. Let's move on to video games. I think we should.
Video games.
We should have a theme song for each segment we go into. All right, I'm working on that. That's my next task. Anyway, first of all, Tim, you introduced us sort of to Octodad on a few podcasts ago, talked about this right before we went to Indie PopCon. And at Indie PopCon, the creators were there, and they were displaying, you could play Octodad there. And, well, Isaac decides to buy a copy because they had a real cheap version. If you bought it at the convention, you got it really cheap. And so he bought it. We came home, and I'll tell you what, Tim, you're right. That is such a fun game.
I never get tired of hearing you say that.
What, that you're right?
Yes. Well, just keep saying that over and over again.
Fine. What's that, like twice? Anyway, that I've said it anyway. anyway, no, it is so fun. I mean, I tried to play it a few times. The controls are so kooky that you're moving this octopus around, and I love the fact that you go around and nobody really notices he's an octopus until, like, well, spoiler, about halfway through the game that kind of gets revealed, but it's just, Dad, how come you look different, basically? But he's an octopus, and you have to manipulate him with the mouse on the computer version, and it is just so bizarre. And the storyline is just they should almost make a movie out of this. That's how great the storyline is. But it's a fun game, Octodad, and Tim, again, you were right. It's awesome.
I would definitely recommend anybody that has a gaming console to pick it up, because one of the fun parts about this game is you can play multiplayer, but you don't play as multiple Octodads. You all play as the one Octodad.
Mm-hmm.
And one of you controls some of his limbs, and the other one controls the other one.
Yeah.
And you can either assign those ahead of time, or you can, as what I prefer, set them as random so that every room you enter, it randomizes which limb you're in control of, and you have to kind of relearn everything again.
Oh, my gosh, that would be fun. We haven't done the multiplayer yet, but now what other platforms is it available on? We got it on the the Steam download for the PC. What other platforms is it available on, do you know?
I'm not sure of all of them, but I do know that's on the PlayStation platform.
Okay.
Because that's where we play it.
Okay. It's probably available on Xbox as well then, I'm sure. If they're smart, they would be.
The developer's named Young Horses, so definitely go out and support an independent developer because they made a really good game.
It's an awesome game. It's 100%. It's fun. I mean, it's just fun. Isaac plays it because I gave up trying to control it because the coordination you have to play this is, by no means am I saying a novice should not try it. It's fun to try it. I had a blast just trying it. I was laughing so hard. But I'll tell you what, I had fun watching Isaac play it. Just watching someone else control it was just the funniest thing. It's a blast. All right, moving on to another quick game here. Marvel Avengers Alliance, that you probably know, the social game. You can play it on the iPod, the iPad. You can also play it on Android-based. You can play it through the website playdom.com. You can also play it on Facebook. But they've released a new version of the game called Marvel Avengers Alliance Tactics. And you've probably seen the games on Facebook where you got to build a kingdom and then you go out and you conquer other territories or whatever. Well, they've kind of based it on that, and you get to send your Marvel Avengers out, and you basically you're fighting Hydra and AIM, and they've done a great job with it. They've made it a really more fun of a game than Avengers, and I was hooked on Avengers Alliance, but this one it's like more of a world that you get to play with. So they just released it recently. I just started playing it yesterday, and I'm already hooked on it. So that's a new one out there, and I think right now it's only available on Facebook. I think it's like a beta play thing going on. Eric, you and Tim, you played Oculus Rift.
Yes. I've been looking forward to getting my hands on one of these for a while, and they had them at the PopCon. The device itself is, lived up to, if not exceeded my expectations. Very cool. That sense of being in the environment is very real. This was the standard definition version, and I could tell a little bit. And they are working on an HD version, which I think will be amazingly will be better than the ones that they've got out now. I think HD is going to make a big difference in that. But it's the device itself is very, very cool. Unfortunately, what they were running on it, the software, left something to be desired. It was really lame, low-res demos where you fly, you know, this really low-res ship that you're flying through rings in space, which is, I guess, okay for demonstrating the controls and such. But, you know, I know for a fact that they've got several games, like good AAA games that have drivers that support the Oculus Rift. Namely, one off the top of my head would be Skyrim. And I thought certainly that they would have one hooked up to Skyrim that we could play, but no, they did not.
That was a little disappointing, I have to agree.
But at least it confirmed that you need it.
Oh yes.
All right, then let's move on here to one other topic before we get into the rant of the Tims. It's good having two Tims on the podcast, but there's always something bothering one of them. So, but first we'll talk one final thing: Indie PopCon. Of course, we talked about it, and we did a whole podcast on it, but Eric, you weren't involved in that because you were out watching Hodor drop the bass. anyway, we had a blast. I mean, as much as we rag on you, Tim Coker, about not being there, we missed you, man. It would have been fun with you, but we understand why you didn't get to go. I mean, we're not upset with you. We just like to give you a hard time. But I will tell you this. I am going to next year's. I would like for us to have a booth and actually podcast somewhat live from the event. So next year's might be a little bit different for us. Now, here's the one thing. They had a little Q&A session at the end of the PopCon, which we didn't go because we were all beat and we were ready to go home. A lot of stuff came out about making next year's better. And one of the things I thought I'm on the fence about, one of the things that came out was that they had too many vendors. And that they're going to cut
too many vendors.
That's one of the and they're going to
no
cut
such thing.
I know that's what I'm thinking. But then
that's
so they're
crazy
gonna,
talk.
And then so they're going to next year they're going to cut back on the vendors is what I hear. So here's the deal: one of the reasons was that some of the vendors didn't bring very much in. So I'm thinking this could be a vendor point of view argument here. But at the same time, two things going on. You had a previous Comic-Con not far before that, a lot of people's dollars. At least now they'll know it's coming up a year in advance and say, hey, we're going to go and save our money for that one. And so keep the right amount of – keep the same vendors there. I thought, again, you can't have too many from the buyer's point of view. I mean, it's great. I mean, the selection we had of different so many different vendors, so many different artworks, so many different – I mean, you got handmade Pokemon plushes there that were being sold. You had Leatherworks. You had – I thought the variety was awesome. Now, there were a couple of places that were repeated. It's like, well, I can just go over to this booth and get it for $2 cheaper. You know, those types of ones, I can see, cutting back on some of that. But on the same aspect, as a consumer, I would rather have that multiple choice. I mean, it took us the full 3 days, or you guys 3 days, me 2 days, to get through the entire vendor area, but I enjoyed doing that.
Dude, I spent 85, maybe 90% of my time in the vendor room.
Yeah, same
and I
here.
Still felt like I didn't get to really take everything in. That statement just seems so bizarre to me because, I mean, that's where most of their money is going to be generated. It just seems crazy. I mean, you can't have too many vendors. Even if you have vendors that are selling the same merchandise, like you said, they're going to have price wars, which works out for the buyer because, it's like, oh, well, they've got it cheaper over here. I'm going to go buy it over here. I just that's really kind of crazy. I mean, I literally hobbled myself
you
walking
did
up
too.
And down those rows. By the end of the day, I mean, I by the end of the weekend, I literally could barely walk. I mean, these guys can attest to that.
Yeah, by the end of the day, you took Sylvester McCoy's cane and you were using that to get along. So, but I will say now, here's the one thing also in defense of them. One of the things it is the economy. The economy is not so great right now, so people aren't spending the hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But they are spending nonetheless, so it's a give and take. But that's one of the things I heard. I hope they don't cut back on vendors. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with the PopCon. I definitely would like to take part in it next year, guys. Hopefully you guys are behind me on this because I would love for all of us to get together again and also be able to have a booth. And, I mean, that would be the nice thing about it. We'd be right there on the floor. And at any one moment, we could all just kind of wander around and do stuff and still man the booth. So there's plenty of us to do that.
I just want to hop in since I wasn't on the actual IndieCon podcast. I just wanted the two highlights for me. I mean, there were a lot of highlights. I loved the entire weekend. I had such a blast. But, I mean, I loved meeting Sylvester McCoy. I love the fact that he is the same person that he was as the doctor and, you know, to a lesser degree, Radagast. But, I mean, he's just, I don't know. I just love that character. I love his personality. And it was great getting to meet him and got my picture taken with him. Joel Hodgson, though, I mean, that man is a hero of mine. And I think Tim Matson's in the same boat that I am on that.
Yeah, big love fest.
Yeah. Just being able to hear him talk and just say whatever he wanted and however he wanted was a real blast. And the fact that, you know, there's a very good chance at this point that they are going to bring the show back in what format is still up in the air. But I'm overjoyed about that. But probably the thing that really kind of surprised me was just how cool Candice McClure is. I mean, I have always
unbelievable.
Yeah,
you guys,
go ahead.
I gotta say this. I walked in, I was getting ready to interview Eric Stewart, or I just finished Eric Stewart, and I was walking around, and I saw you guys talking to someone, and I'm like, well, who are they talking to? I'll go hang out with these guys for a second. And there's Candice McClure, and you guys are just sitting there talking on the floor, just, you know, BSing, nothing going on, just talking like you guys are good friends from way back. And I walked up to the, you know, I mean, sure, after she left, you guys had to do some drool wiping, but still, you guys, and she talked about just about anything. She talked about where she's from. I mean, you guys just had a regular nerd geek conversation for a good 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was weird. And I mean, I was waiting for her to come back to her booth, and I saw her walking towards the booth, and I just, you know, accosted her on the floor. It was actually the fact that she wasn't at the booth, I think, was part of why it was such a cool conversation. It didn't feel stilted or rushed. There weren't people waiting in line behind me to talk to her. So she just stood there talking to us, and we just had a regular conversation. And she was just very, very cool and gracious. And you know, she may have been thinking, you know, oh, God, well, these guys are a bunch of hardcore nerds. Get me out of here. But it didn't come across in the conversation at all.
No, not at all.
She was a sweetheart, and she's just as beautiful, if not more, in real life. She's got those amazing hazel eyes. I've been a fan of her since I saw her in Jeremiah, which was a series on Showtime that J. Michael Straczynski did after the completion of Babylon 5. It lasted two or three seasons, and I liked it. It was a decent show, but I do remember her character, and that's the first time I remember seeing her, and so I've been kind of stalking her online ever since.
Yeah. Well, I guess she's got the order of protection, so.
I think that in a nutshell really sums up why all of us had a really good time.
Yeah.
I didn't run into a single person that wasn't really nice and very friendly and totally willing to take time out of their day to talk to you, regardless of whether you were just some dude in a cosplay walking the show, an artist, a vendor, or a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
You were all extremely accessible and extremely nice.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, my one experience that I had a blast with was with Jackson Bostwick, the original Captain Marvel, Shazam from the Shazam Isis Hour. I sat there and talked with him, and he, you know, I mean, he jokingly called me a cheap bastard. But it was all out of fun, and there was, you know, I had a blast talking with him, and it's like, you know, just everybody there. Again, I never had a chance to talk to John DiMaggio, so I don't know how he was, but I so badly wanted to get him to tell Tim to kiss his shiny little ass.
Oh my God!
Oh yeah, that would have been a great soundbite for the show.
Yeah, and then in the Q&A or the panel they had at the pretty much towards the close of the PopCon. Tim, you sat next to me for most of that panel. Everybody kept praising him as the Joker, and each time you kept hearing Tim go...
wait. Not everybody was praising his Joker. Well, there were a couple of people who thought it was good. Let's not go over
it. Oh, they were praising it, and then you were sitting there going cringing in the seat, and I know.
It's because it's painful to be among so many people who are wrong.
Did they get him to do his Aquaman voice?
No.
No.
Are you kidding me?
Did you guys ever see him on...
Oh, my God.
No one mentioned it. No one mentioned it at all.
Have you ever watched Batman Brave and the Bold, the cartoon?
Very little. Absolutely,
like, it is definitely for kids, but it is also for people who grew up loving, like, the deep bench of crazy DC characters and situations. And so for somebody like me that is getting a little bit fed up with everything in DC having to be super gritty all the time, I love how fun this show is, and that my, like, hands down best thing about it is that he does the voice of Aquaman, and it's the first time Aquaman has been awesome, because he is an over-the-top capital H hero, and he's constantly composing the title of his latest memoir, The Adventure of the blah blah blah. He, like, he narrates his own adventures out loud. He's incredibly vain but super good-natured, and I don't know. It's really hilarious. I should send you guys a link to find an episode with him on Netflix, because they're streaming now. But man, he is funny.
I would have that would have been nice to hear him do that then. But
it's funny you should mention that, because I really found that there was an inordinate number of Aquaman related cosplayers at this con. I have never seen so many people dressed up as Aquaman or someone associated with him.
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
I especially like the Aquaman and Ariel partner.
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
And then the female Aquaman.
Really cool. Really nice cosplay. Oh, yeah. Really nice.
And Mera, right? Aquaman's wife. Wasn't there one of those?
Yep.
There
were a couple of those.
Okay.
Well, I only took pictures of the one, but believe me when I say there were more Aquaman people there than I actually took pictures of. No kidding. I mean, if you look at my pictures that I posted, I think there are more of them than any other single cosplay in my pictures. And there were even more of them at the show that I did not take pictures of.
Well, speaking of which, let me promote this. If you go to our Facebook page, the Nerd Up Podcast on Facebook, you know, give us a like for one thing, and another thing, you can check out all the pictures we had from PopCon, including a collection from Tim, which includes several cosplay people.
Yeah, and I do just want, this will, you know, link into the rant that's upcoming, but I just want to say that there were a lot of female cosplayers that were really creative with these costumes. I mean, how many female Thors did we see?
Oh, yeah.
But there were also, like, female Doctor Whos, and it's not like they were just putting on men's clothes to look like a male doctor. They were doing, like, female interpretations of the male doctors. And so, like, you know, the one that was the Matt Smith doctor, she was wearing, like, a skirt and, you know, and it was all the same color coding. And she was instantly recognizable as Matt Smith's doctor, but as a female version of that. I just was really impressed by that. It was very creative and very cool. And, you know, I mean, why not? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and that will move into the rant here, but I got one more thing to say. I like the female Thor, which was a male dressed up as a female Thor. I thought that was pretty funny. That and the male.
Absolutely nothing compares to the male slave Leia.
That's, yeah, oh, exactly.
Yes. With the beard.
I saw him at C2E2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he was going by, and I wasn't able to, like, stop and get a picture of him, so I was so grateful to you for getting such a great picture of him.
Well, plus, we actually had a little bit of a conversation with him. He was pretty funny. He was into that character.
Yeah. He's like, well, you have the body for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that brings us to the rant of the week. You know, so we got two Tims on the podcast. Something's always going to bother one of them. Well, we're going to try to feature it as much as possible because we love to hear them complain about anything they can. So, hey, take it away. Some Tim's got something to say, right?
Oh, God, yes. This week, it's me. And I've been building up to this. This is a subject that's been on my mind for a while. But it really wasn't until I went to Indie PopCon that it really kind of solidified in my mind. And there have been several articles posted. I know that we've shared it back and forth, but there's a great article on thedailybeast.com by a guy named Arthur Chu that I can't recommend enough. You should go and read it, and then you should take it to heart.
Just let me jump in and say I did post links to all both of those articles plus the Joss Whedon video on the Nerd Up Facebook page. So if you guys are listening, go to the page. You can find links to those articles.
Excellent. And now here we go. Let me just, you know, do a little stretching exercises here. All right, here we are. Settle in, guys, because this is going to take a little bit.
Okay.
The thing that I want to talk about today is related to a couple of subjects that have been part of the discussion online lately, and rightly so. I'm talking about the phenomenon of the fake geek girl or guy and bullying. Now, I grew up as what you might say was a pudgy sort of gamer, someone who has some generous proportions. So it may surprise you to learn that, given how awesome I am today, that I was never really part of the popular crowd. And I spent a lot of my time on the outside looking in. And despite how desperately I wanted, there was never any danger of a super attractive girl falling for me, despite everything a John Hughes movie taught me. To me, yep. Attractive girls seem to be simply a different species, and they spoke an entirely different language, one I did not understand. So what's a self-respecting geek to do in this situation? Well, I did what a lot of guys did. I continued to nurse pop culture fantasies that the hot cheerleader would fall for me if only I could set up the right situation or the right circumstances. And at the same time, I took solace in my geeky pursuits, comic books, video games, Dungeons and Dragons, you know the drill. So I say all this to lay the groundwork for what I really want to get to, so you'll understand where I'm coming from and know that I wasn't always this gorgeous hunk of man meat that you see before you today. Nerds out there, I am one of you, and I share your concerns when I look around and I see all these attractive people taking part in our nerdy pursuits. These are people who at one time we would have seen as enemies in a John Hughes film, or as the sorority and fraternity jerks from Revenge of the Nerds. Our place of refuge has been co-opted and invaded by pretty people. How dare they? They have no idea that Starbuck was a dude and not some hot young blonde girl. They don't know why Star Trek Into Darkness was an abomination. They don't know a D20 if they see it, and they couldn't figure the to-hit number for their character if they tried. They're not real geek. If they want to hang with us, they're going to have to prove their nerd street cred. Nerd boys and girls, I'm going to zig now when you thought I was going to zag. I don't know how to tell you this, but in this situation, you are the Alpha Betas from Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah. And what you are doing is bullying, and this has got to stop. Let me tell you why. The guys from the Nerd Up podcast, as you hear, recently spent a weekend and steeped in pop culture at Indie PopCon. I got to say, my experience there was really great. I'm not exaggerating when I say that I didn't meet a single person that wasn't amazingly friendly. Everyone seemed to be having a great time geeking out over amazing cosplay, fantastic art, affordable comic books, you know, anything that trips your trigger, everything nerdy. Everyone seemed to be united in their admiration and their celebration of all the things that I personally love. Well, guess what? Many of them were attractive men and women. It's shocking, I know, but hear me out. I could make a persuasive argument about the fact that no matter who you are, you shouldn't be a jerk to anybody, that the golden rule is not just some corny saying, and that if everyone applied it to their daily lives, this world would be a truly amazing place to live. That's all very true, and many people can be swayed by an appeal to reason. These people are already nodding their heads out there. They get what I'm trying to say. They're not who I'm talking to. I'm talking to the hardcore nerd that feels threatened in their refuge by this invading horde of the popular kids. I'm here to tell you, I understand what you're feeling and have at some point felt those exact same things. It's a little weird to see the prom queen wearing a Green Lantern shirt. And frankly, it's downright earth-shattering to find out that she not only knows the difference between Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart, but she can cite reasons why Jon Stewart is legitimately the greater of the two. Popular kids have an awesome life, where they are idolized for their looks and their abilities. So why do they need to co-opt our world? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because our world is awesome. Everyone else is just finally waking up to that fact. And before you get your torches and pitchforks, let me tell you why you should consider this a great thing. One of the greatest things about what we nerds like is that we can get transported to a new world and experience it through someone else's eyes. Through comic books, video games, and things like that, we can vicariously find out what it's like to be somebody else for a while and discover things that we have in common with them. We can watch the rise and fall of their story while occasionally finding that we can understand our very own situation a little bit better after observing theirs. Now, imagine if we limited those experiences to those created only by people who are just like us. For me, that would mean that I only read stories written by overly sarcastic, straight, white guys from the middle class. Now, there are some great experiences to be gleaned from these people. Don't get me wrong. But I would be far poorer from limiting myself this way. It's really a dull prospect because no matter how awesome I may be, and let's face it, I am pretty damn awesome. I would not get to experience what it would be like to be a young Muslim girl inheriting the powers of Ms. Marvel. I wouldn't get to experience what it's like to be a Korean businessman who's inexplicably imprisoned for 15 years and then unceremoniously released. I wouldn't experience what it's like to be Commander Shepard, the red-headed, horniest space lesbian that would sleep with every girl in the known universe. In short, it would be much harder for me to understand the world around me because I simply did not think about what it would be like to approach it from someone else's point of view. I've strayed a little bit from my intended topic, but it's only because I think this stuff's important, and I think we should all be talking about it. So to get back to the issue I raised at the beginning, the invasion of the hot people and why it's not a problem in any way. To quote Revenge of the Nerds, all jocks ever think about is sports. All nerds ever think about is sex. Well, as a teenage nerd, that might have appeared true, but it's a line of thinking that we really ought to distance ourselves from. When it comes to healthy relationships with other people, sex, frankly, occupies a relatively small amount of the time you're going to spend with them. While being physically attractive to each other is an important aspect, it's not the only aspect. That girl in the Slave Leia outfit may be brain-meltingly beautiful, and yes, Rachel Moore at Indie PopCon was indeed brain-meltingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence of this, yeah, go see our pictures with her on the NerdUp Facebook page. But if that's all she is to you, then you're doing it wrong. She's way more than what you see on the outside. Now, I don't know her personally. I've never met her before the convention, but she has just as much right to be involved in nerdy pursuits as I do. There is no reason for me to think less of her because of her outward appearance or the way she's dressed. If I were to get belligerent with her and to demand that she prove that she knows all the ins and outs of Star Wars, I would be bullying her.
Mm-hmm.
I would be engaging in the hurtful behavior that I so much hated in some of the people I went to school with. I know what it's like to be judged by what you look like, and it sucks. Why would I want to put anybody else through that? So let me tell you about an encounter I had at the convention. I was walking the show floor. I came across an artist who was drawing a wraparound cover to the Guardians of the Galaxy. The pencil work was great. The artist was friendly and willing to chat about their craft. So I decided to buy the very book they were working on. I paid for it, and then I wandered off to the next booth. At the next booth, I purchased a stack of prints. I asked that artist if they had anything to put the prints in, and they didn't have anything. But the previous artist overheard my conversation and came up with an acrylic protector to put the prints in. So here is one artist giving me something free of charge to put stuff that I didn't buy from them in. So the next day I returned and I picked up my beautifully done Guardians of the Galaxy comic. I thanked the artist and we got to talk some more. Now, the artist in question is Serena Guerra. Does the fact that she is a beautiful, petite, blonde woman change that story in the least? No, not for me. Don't get me wrong, I think she's really attractive. But the fact that she is a talented artist who was generous with her time and her work means a lot more to me. I also met Carrie Smith, the creator of a comic book that I enjoy. I've mentioned Plume several times, probably will mention it several times again, because it's a book that I really enjoy. I think it's important to support books from smaller publishers. Does the fact that she's not only a woman, but also an attractive person mean that she has no business being involved in comics? No, that's ludicrous. I liked her comic before I met her. I like it even more afterwards. Why? Because she was enthusiastically friendly. She spent time talking with me without seeming like she was in a rush to get on to something else. And that's someone I'm happy to support. Again, you can check out photos of these two artists on her Facebook page. As an awkward young nerd, I had no idea how to talk to attractive women. We seemed to have absolutely nothing in common. And I felt like there was no way to even start a conversation with them, let alone get a date. The things I loved were looked down on and mocked. Being a geek was not something you owned up to with pride. Those days are thankfully gone. Now Marvel movies are some of the most profitable and critically acclaimed movies in theaters. The Last of Us is an example of a masterpiece in interactive storytelling and not just a video game. I can find hordes of people passionate about a space western that lasted only a few dozen episodes. It's a great time to be a geek. Look around. There are so many people you have something in common with. Some of them may even be that hot guy or girl that you would like to date. It's time we started learning the true lessons from those 80s teen comedies. Bullying sucks, and bullies are jerks. Let's not be jerks. There's no way to earn or win someone you're attracted to. Their affection isn't a prize. It can't be stolen. It can't be coerced, and it can't be won. It has to be given to you. And it won't be given to you if you're a bully. At the end of the day, the Alpha Betas from Revenge of the Nerds were horrible people. So why would any of us want to be like them? Thus ends the rant.
Well, let me jump in here real quick. Let me give my quick response. I think being very well represented in the movie Revenge of the Nerds, my name actually being Gilbert. One of the things that that he provided was that he provided that line, or pretty much the idea that, you know, the nerds are always thinking about sex. Well, not necessarily sex, but here's what I think. The Alpha Betas, they're the type that a woman will, you know, they'll be attracted to that bad boy Alpha Beta. They'll go get married. A few years later, they are living with an alcoholic that beats on them. The nerds won't do that. But on the other aspect of it, if they can come down to the fact that, hey, being a nerd is cool, they can realize that, hey, I don't need all this alcohol and manliness and testosterone. I can be a nerd. I can be sensitive. And I can have a lot of fun in the process. That's one of the things that, as a nerd, I learned. I mean, my inner Deanna Troi comes out every time I meet somebody that's having a problem. I'm constantly empathizing with them. And I have yet to meet a nerd that has not had some sort of empathic power. I mean, they can all say, yeah, man, been there. And I'm with you on that 100%. Let's not be the bullies. Let's not, you know, develop your empathic powers. Learn to realize that, you know, there's whatever situation's going on, you're going to either have gone through it or eventually will go through it. And everybody is in this world the same place. Let's all have fun doing it together. So great rant, Tim. Great rant. You guys, let me hear your responses.
Well, I, like most other nerds, you know, suffered from bullying and exclusion when I was growing up. And yes, it's hurtful and you become very resentful of it. It's very easy to look at those people, the athletes and the beautiful people, as being the opposition, as being the enemy, and to look at your life as a battle against those people and to segregate yourself from those people completely. But to look at it that way nowadays is wrong. You're missing the point that we won. We won that battle a while back. That's why these people aren't infiltrating our ranks. They're integrating into our society because we saturated society with our culture. I don't know if you want to, you know, put this, you know, if you want to contribute this to Bill Gates as popularizing, you know, oh well, you know, nerds are contributors to society. They're you know, innovators. I don't know where it happened, but at some point, nerd culture did saturate everyone else. Everyone is involved in it. People, and that's the reason that we have so much of it now. This is why we have so many conventions. That's why there is a indie pop con. That's why there are Marvel movies that are making billions of dollars worldwide, is because nerd culture has saturated the entire world. So at this point, to resent these people because they want to enjoy what it is that we've known about all of our lives, it's ridiculous. It's not helping anyone. It's not helping you. And it's not going to achieve anything. They're here. They're not going anywhere. Nerd culture is a part of everyone's lives now. The best thing is to do is be thankful for it. And that's my rant.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. I mean, Tim, when you were talking through your spiel there, the thing that really struck me, and it wasn't, I actually had not thought of it in these terms before, but I realized I've been through all of this before, which is in the early 90s when Nirvana got big and suddenly punk and alternative music became something that everybody was into. And there was a lot of resentment, I remember, that went on amongst us punk rock kids and you know, whatever, alternative music people. And there was a bar down in Carbondale. Well, it was a pizza place called 611, which you may recall.
Mm. Fondly.
You know? And, you know, certainly I had my experience. I always was able to do well in whatever kind of social group I would kind of find myself, more or less. But, you know, I found myself on the business end of kind of click-based contempt from time to time if I wander into the, you know, the American tap for all the frat guys and whatever. But the point was, I remember that after, you know, the kind of alternative music and punk boom happened and you started getting jocks showing up in the mosh pits actually trying to hurt people and whatever. But there was a lot of resentment. And I remember seeing somebody actually putting up a flyer on the strip in Carbondale that said, "All of you jocks and frat guys that have been showing up at 611, stop coming. You're wrecking our scene." You know, and I thought, did being excluded teach you nothing? You know, that was one of the things that kind of helped sour me on the whole concept of scenes in general, was that, you know, so much of it is based on exclusion that's just as hierarchical and potentially as cruel as anything else. And all of us that felt the kind of sting of somebody judging us really should know better. You know, I think that's what it comes down to, is that this was our little safe place, you know, for a lot of nerds. And I think for the more socially kind of affected you are, the younger you are, that it becomes even more of a safe place. And it is definitely hard to have high functioning people show up and enjoy it. But the other thing is that, you know, nobody is perfect and everybody feels some kind of pressures to conform or succeed. And if you've got a natural, you know, gift for being athletic, you know, what's wrong with playing sports and what's wrong with being good at it? And if you're naturally good looking, well, you're going to do the stuff that naturally good looking people do, which often doesn't involve spending your teenage years going through long boxes, you know. But but at the same time, there's also pressure among kind of quote popular normal people to not like this stuff, or there used to be. And I think, honestly, since especially the Marvel movies have been so fun and so culturally kind of powerful at getting the word out, I think that a lot of people who maybe had pretended not to like this stuff that much because it was dorky or nerdy, they can suddenly let their hair down. And, you know, you realize that, okay, yeah, your life may have been a little easier in some ways because you're attractive, but at the same time, maybe you always secretly thought it would be fun to dress up in Sailor Moon and go to a show, you know, but you never dared to do it. And now people do. And I think everybody gets to get over that hang up, including us and including them. So I think that that's a reason for all of us to celebrate and share this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think that part of the impetus for me to kind of put this all together was just coming to that realization that part of the reason I like being a nerd is because I can be accepted. And yeah, I experienced bullying growing up, and that really sucks, man. So why would I want to do it to somebody else? And that just is what gave rise to this. It just finally kind of came to a head. I had such a great time at Indie PopCon, and I was looking around, and there were a lot of really attractive people there doing stuff that, you know, I used to really like and used to kind of feel like that's my refuge. So I can kind of understand how people can get a little offended and get a little testy when they see these people at their cons. But I just would like to have everybody just take a moment and pause and take a deep breath. If you're an attractive person and this geek is kind of being a little iffy about you being there, understand that, you know what? He may have been bullied by people that look just like you. And so he may see you as a threat. So maybe give him a little understanding. And if you're that nerd giving people a hard time just because they look good, hey, man, it's time to relax.
Amen to that. And especially, you know, like I said, one of the things I always have a hard time with is I'm a huge – this relates, stick with me on this. I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who, right? I love watching Doctor Who. I'm not the guy to memorize what happened on any episode or in who, what actor was where. I mean, I got my favorite doctors and all, but I, you know, I don't know all the details of the show. Someone will ask me, "Are you a Doctor Who fan?" I will say, "Hell yes! I love even the new series with David Tennant and Matt Smith, all those. I mean, and Eccleston. I mean, it's all good." But at the same time, if and I've had this happen to me before. "Oh yeah, well then, what did the Doctor do to get out of this, huh?" And I'm like, "I just said I liked the show. I didn't say I was going to memorize it for a final." I mean, it's not – it's that whole point. I hate it when people do that. It's like, "Oh, yeah, well, what did Batman do to beat the Joker in this issue?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just read the
issue." You can be a fan without being a fanatic.
Exactly. And I always hate that. And I mean, and that's the thing, playing on your part there, Tim, is that even the nerds will try to bully each other in that aspect. Sure, it's with less fists and more with words, but still it's the same thing.
Yeah, but nerd on nerd violence is still sad to see.
We must stop the nerd on nerd. All right.
Can't we all just get along?
Get a long box.
I can see there are, you know, especially with the cosplayers, I can see where some of these complaints that I've read online are coming from, because traditional nerds are not the most attractive people. Some of us are a little overweight. some of us don't have the most attractive features. And for years, these people could go to a con and dress up and get a lot of attention and kudos from their fellow nerds. And now they're seeing these people show up who, you know, are, you know, wearing a Leia slave girl outfit and look absolutely delicious in that outfit. That doesn't take away from the girl who's a few pounds overweight who wants to dress up as Leia. If she puts good craftsmanship in her costume, I'm going to notice that costume as well. Now, you know, that my appreciation may be a little different for the two Leias, but I'm still going to appreciate what both of them bring to the table.
Well, or absolutely. you got this thing here that one of the things I enjoyed is that there's a guy in a Captain America costume. He didn't have man boobs. He looked good. But on the same lines, there was a guy dressed up like Captain Marvel, the original Shazam Captain Marvel, and he had a belly on him. I mean, that's how I would have looked in that costume. But I'll tell you what, that costume was phenomenal. It was detailed every last bit. It was beautiful. So, but yeah, while I don't really want to see, you know, for example, my Captain America with man boobs, if he did a good costume, yeah, he did it all right then. Well, guys, you know what? We're running out of time. Let's do some stuff. Let's get out of here. I got to do some editing. You guys got some things to do this weekend, I'm sure. I'm supposed to go geocaching. You guys ever gone geocaching?
No.
Sounds like fun, but no.
It's interesting. You get the coordinates and you got to find. I'm going to take my smartphone with me on this time around, or, you know, a GPS of some sort, and you go out and you find where people have, and you sign in that you found their cache. So it's kind of cool, kind of fun. So I got to go do that. Anyway, so we're going to close out the podcast. Once again, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Again, if you want to go there, we've got all sorts of things going on the site itself. You can leave us a voice message. You can also check out our merch table. You can check out T-shirts, coffee mugs, pretty much anything. We've tried to brand everything with our logo on it. You can click on the link from the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com site, or you can just go to cafepress.com/nerduppodcast. Keep the podcast free by helping support us and our ventures. I'm finding more and more that this web space, this server space, kind of takes up some money, so help us keep it free. So also, you can get a hold of us on Twitter. In fact, you can get a hold of all of us now on Twitter. Thank you very much for joining the group, Tim Coker. I'll give mine out, and then the alphabetical order from last name. We'll go through the our Twitter handles. I'm at Gil Wilson. That's 1L in Gil.
I'm at Eric Bill, ERICBILL.
I am at Tim K Has to Say.
And I remain at Tim Gone Mad.
All right, so there you go. Get a hold of any of us. Also, you can tweet us at NerdUpPodcast, and we'll get a hold of you some way or another. And if you got any questions, complaints, gripes, or whatever you want, praise is good too, by the way. So you can always do that. We'll be glad to read it on the air, or if you leave us a voice message from the website, we'll play that on the podcast as well. Well, guys, that does it for the Nerd Up Podcast. In closing, I'm Gil T. Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley.
I'm Tim Coker.
And I'm Tim Mattson.
And that's us, a bunch of nerds talking around. So that's it for this Nerd Up Podcast. Stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.